morning. My name is Chelsea Brennigan. I am the ETA and Engagement Manager with the Department's Interpretations and Technical Advice Division. Today, I will be representing the Department of Revenue as the facilitator for this public hearing. It is currently 11:02 a.m. on December 18th, 2024. We will now begin the scheduled public hearing for solicitation of comments on the proposed rule WAC 458-20-305, or Rule 305, titled Sales and Use Tax Deferral, Conversion of Underutilized Commercial Property into Affordable Housing. The purpose of this proposed Rule 305 is to clarify Chapter 8259 RCW, which prior to enactment into law was E2 SSB 6175. Next slide, please. Before we begin, we would like to go over a few guidelines for this public hearing. First, please note that this hearing is being recorded. We ask that all attendees please keep their cameras off for the duration of this hearing to allow for better connectivity. Additionally, you will note that all attendees, you are muted upon entry to this public hearing, and we ask that all attendees remain muted for the duration of the hearing unless they wish to make a comment or provide feedback. If you would like to make a comment or provide feedback, please use the raise hand feature, which is located under the React icon, and then please wait until your name is called to unmute yourself. Before commenting, please introduce yourself and share the organization you are representing, if applicable. Please note that we will not be addressing any comments in the chat. Rather, we ask that anyone who would like to provide a comment or feedback on this draft rule during this public hearing do so verbally. If you are not comfortable voicing your comment during this public hearing, we encourage you to submit your considerations in writing. Please provide all written comments to my colleague Tim Danforth at timd@dor.wa.gov on or before December 26, 2024. If you are having any technical issues, please leave a message in the chat and we will help you. Other persons who are present from the Department of Revenue who are present for this hearing include Brent Madison in his role as Rules Coordinator with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, Patrick Montatina from the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, Mike Perper from the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, Debbie Brower from the Audit Division, John Yarenson from the Audit Division, Barbara Imperio, Management Analyst with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, and Kathy Holder, Management Analyst with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, who is also monitoring our recording equipment this morning. As noted, this meeting is being recorded by Department of Revenue and is also being broadcast by TVW. We are conducting this public hearing remotely through Zoom. Participants here are joined through Zoom, and all participant information was provided to the department upon registration to this public hearing. We do not have other parties physically present for this hearing. Next slide, please. This public hearing is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of Chapter 3405 RCW, Washington's Administrative Procedures Act. The purpose of this hearing is to solicit comments from the public on the proposed new Rule 305. This hearing was announced through publication in the State Register as WSR 24-22-132, which was filed with the Code Revisor on November 6, 2024. Copies of this draft rule are available on the department's website. We have included a link to the draft rule in the chat for your convenience and review. The proposed rule is written in the legislative drafting style. Two proposed additions, both of which are non-interpretive and reflect the statutory language, will be shown in this presentation in red line form, that is, underlined and struck through as appropriate. We consider any comments received pertaining to the proposed rule. We appreciate receiving comments in writing and will evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. You may send written comments to my colleague, Tim Danforth, at timd@dor.wa.gov no later than December 26, 2024, so the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding with future rulemaking activities. As mentioned, the department will not respond to substantive comments or questions that are submitted in the chat function of this virtual hearing. Again, please reserve the chat for technical issues only. This draft rule is intended to replace the interim guidance statement regarding the application of the tax deferral for a program for multifamily housing authorized by Chapter 8259 RCW, which was published on the department's website on September 6, 2024. Taxpayers may rely upon this interim guidance statement prior to the adoption of this rule. A link to the interim guidance statement has been included in the chat for your convenience and review. Next slide, please. Before opening the hearing for comments, I will outline the key points in the proposed rule draft. I will also review the changes the department made to the draft rule subsequent to publishing the interim guidance statement on the department's website. Some of the key terms of the draft rule include definitions of key terms, examples that apply Chapter 8259 RCW to hypothetical situations. Notably, this will include some clarifying changes from the interim guidance statement to this proposed rule draft. It will also include the application process to the department for a tax deferral certificate. This includes explaining the method of apportionment the department plans to use to determine qualifying deferrals after project completion. Additionally, the draft rule explains the cost and tax deferral estimates calculated prior to construction for investment projects. The draft rule also clarifies the review process available to those denied an application for deferral of taxes. The review offer for review and hearings division here at the department. The draft rule reviews the process if actual costs of the investment project exceed the estimated costs and also explains what happens if the investment project will not be completed by the scheduled completion date. The proposed rule draft also outlines the consequences when a conditional recipient fails to comply with the requirements of the statute. Namely, if the project falls out of compliance, deferred taxes are immediately due, including interest, although not penalties. The draft rule also clarifies that deferred taxes are waived if the investment project is operated in compliance with all statutory requirements for at least 10 years. Note that if there are aspects of the proposed rule that we do not specifically cover during this hearing, please feel free to ask about these after we have finished presenting. Or alternatively, you may submit a written comment. As mentioned, there will be an opportunity for comments at the end of our presentation. So first, please move to the next slide. Thank you. So first, I'd like to focus on a few select definitions. Subsection 2E of the draft rule defines eligible investment projects. These generally mean an investment project that receives a conditional certificate of program approval from the city that is currently an underutilized commercial property and will be converted into multifamily housing. In relevant part, any mixed-use project, meaning a project that ultimately has both residential and commercial components, must confine its commercial activities to the ground floor only. Additionally, only projects that convert existing underutilized commercial properties into multifamily housing will be eligible for deferral. The demolition and rebuilding of structures will not qualify for deferral. Subsection 2I of the draft rule provides the definition of investment project and includes a non-exhaustive list of related facilities. This includes driveways, parking lots, covered parking structures, fitness facilities for residents, event spaces for use by residents, residential storage areas, and more. Section 3 of the proposed rule discusses what types of property may be classified as underutilized commercial property. Here, the department added two terms, qualifying use and qualifying activities. Qualifying use means that the use or intended use of the property is for retailing, office-related, or administrative activities. Qualifying activities is defined as including selling goods and services to customers for their consumption, and professional, clerical, and administrative activities, such as human resources, accounting, legal, sales and marketing, and executive management activities. The rule also provides non-exclusive lists of activities that are eligible qualifying activities and activities that are not eligible qualifying activities. Examples of activities that are eligible qualifying activities include, but are not necessarily limited to, the use of copy rooms, employee offices, reception areas, conference rooms, and/or sales activities. Examples of activities that are not eligible qualifying activities include, but again, are not necessarily limited to, manufacturing, wholesaling, warehousing, and other similar activities. The term intended to be used means that the underutilized commercial property is expected to be used for a qualifying use, that is to say, retailing, office-related, or administrative activities, at the time of application to the city for conditional approval. To substantiate that the applicant intended to use the property for a qualifying use, an applicant must demonstrate this intent in the materials provided with their application. This can be done with blueprints or site plans, current or historical zoning, building permits, marketing materials, leasing or sales agreements, promotional materials, or other similar documentation. Next slide, please. Thank you. Now we will review the tax deferral application procedures and requirements. In subsection 4, the draft rule explains the process for applying to the department for deferral after obtaining a conditional approval from a city. The draft rule provides where applicants can obtain the deferral application, which is available either on the department's website or by calling the number listed in the rule draft. The rule also provides guidance on what documents are required for a complete application. Additionally, the rule clarifies the procedures for when the application is approved or denied, including procedures to appeal the denial of the conditional recipient's application. Upon approval of the application, the department will issue the conditional recipient a tax deferral certificate and advise them of the documentation they should retain so the department can substantiate the amount of tax that may be properly deferred after the project's completion. If the department denies the application, an applicant may seek a Rule 100 hearing, which is an informal administrative review process with the department. This is available if the applicant applies for review within 30 days of the date on their denial notice. I did want to flag a change from the interim guidance statement. Specifically, the draft rule contains a new example 5, which illustrates the application requirements prior to the initiation of construction, specifically for a project that is undertaken in multiple phases. The example considers a multi-story building in which the ground floor is an existing coffee shop being renovated along with the conversion of the second and third floors, which are currently being used as office space, into multifamily housing. The applicant has divided the project into phases, with the renovation of the coffee shop being the first phase. Notably, this portion of the project does not qualify for deferral, and the conversion of floors 2 and 3 as the second phase. The applicant requests guidance from the department as to whether they may apply for building permits for the coffee shop renovation before submitting their deferral application to convert the second and third floors into multifamily housing units. The example clarifies that to maintain deferral eligibility for the multifamily housing for floors 2 and 3, the applicant cannot initiate construction on this phase of the project until it has submitted its deferral application to the department. However, the applicant may initiate construction on the coffee shop renovation phase of the project before submitting a deferral application for the multifamily housing phase, as the coffee shop renovation is ineligible for deferral. This is because initiation of construction separately applies to each phase of the project, and so initiating construction on the coffee shop renovation on the coffee shop renovation would not invalidate the potential renovation for converting floors 2 and 3. Basically, a conditional recipient cannot initiate construction on any phase of the project that may involve qualifying portions of the property prior to submitting an application to the department. Notably, this includes potential related facilities such as stairwells and other common areas. Approval from the department must be obtained prior to the initiation of construction. Note that multiple qualified buildings will require separate applications for each building. With respect to timing, the department will either approve or deny a completed application within 60 days. Subsection 5 of the draft rule addresses what happens after the department approves the conditional recipient's application and explains that the tax deferral certificate will state the estimated amount of qualifying taxable purchases eligible for deferral and the time period for which the certificate is valid. Subsection 6 of the draft rule addresses how the tax deferral certificate should be used and explains that the certificate is valid only during the active construction of the qualified investment project and expires upon the issuance of the certificate of occupancy. Next slide, please. Subsection 7 of the draft rule explains the process for apportionment of an underutilized commercial property that is only partially used for qualifying activities. This subsection provides the basic formula the department will use to estimate the amount of purchases for which tax will be eligible for deferral. Please note the formula in subsection 7A little I near the top of page 7 of the draft rule, also included here on the slide. Basically, the formula for estimating the amount of purchases eligible for deferral is the square feet of the investment property that has a qualifying use over the total square footage of the investment property. This ratio is then multiplied by the estimated total cost of the investment project. This will then equal the estimated dollar amount of purchases that are eligible for the deferral program. The draft rule also explains how the department will determine the final deferred amount. After the conditional recipient has been issued a certificate of occupancy, a department representative or representatives will tour the operationally complete investment project and will audit the conditional recipient's records. The actual construction costs must be for eligible purposes for the underutilized commercial property. This means that the costs must be for qualifying multifamily housing to be eligible. The final deferral figure will supersede the department's preliminary deferral estimate. If the department determines that any purchases were not eligible for deferral, the conditional recipient will be immediately required to pay sales and use tax on these purchases, plus interest, but not penalties. If the conditional recipient disagrees with the department's determination, they may seek review through a Rule 100 hearing. Next slide, please. Thank you. So please note that it has been brought to our attention that subsections 7B and subsection 11 of the draft rule omit certain city processes that are found in RCW 82.59-070, and these subsections must be edited to conform to the statute. These changes are not interpretive and merely reiterate the requirements found under the statute. Subsection 7B will be updated in relevant part as indicated on the slide. The updates on the slide are shown in the legislative redline style and read as such. When will the department certify the final amount of sales and use taxes that qualify for deferral? The conditional recipient must notify the department in writing that the eligible investment project is operationally complete within 30 days after the local jurisdiction has issued its determination that the conditional recipient's work is completed and that the affordable housing to be offered are consistent with the application and contract approved by the local jurisdiction, and the investment project continues to qualify for tax deferral. I'll keep on this slide to allow you a little bit of time to review these changes. Next slide, please. Subsection 8 of the draft rule discusses mixed-use projects. An investment project may have both multifamily housing and commercial activity if the commercial activity is restricted to the ground floor. Note that points of access to the commercial businesses that are not on the ground floor could potentially qualify as related facilities, so we encourage applicants to seek a letter ruling from the department prior to submitting their application for the deferral to confirm. I wanted to flag another change from the initial rule draft here, specifically what is now example 7. So example 7 has been renumbered from example 6, which is how it was referenced in the initial draft rule for discussion purposes that was filed on June 5th and discussed at the July 23rd public meeting. What is now example 7 considers the conversion of a ground floor daycare with playground and office building into a multifamily housing investment project that includes the renovation of the playground for use by the residents and a ground floor restaurant. This change of facts was simply to reduce potential confusion and does not introduce substantively different concepts than the chapter, than the example 6 in the previous version of this example in the prior version of the rule draft. The proposed rule draft also addresses whether an addition will qualify for deferral. Specifically, whether an addition will qualify will be dependent upon the applicant's unique facts and circumstances. Non-qualifying portions of the property will be apportioned as dictated under subsection 7 of the proposed rule, and the proposed rule draft also includes example 8 for further guidance in this area. Otherwise, the rule encourages applicants to contact the department if they are unsure whether their addition may qualify for deferral. Next slide, please. Thank you. With respect to requesting extensions, subsection 9 provides that applicants must notify the department in writing if the cost of the project will exceed the estimated project costs on the deferral certificate. The conditional recipient may apply to the department for an amended certificate. Any extension request to the department must be submitted in writing and include an explanation for the estimated cost increase. Subsection 10 provides that if the investment project will not be completed by the scheduled completion date, the conditional recipient may request an extension from the city. Any city-approved extensions must be sent by the city to the department before the expiration date on the deferral certificate. If the extension is granted, the conditional recipient must contact the department in writing to amend the deferral certificate. Next slide, please. Subsection 11 explains the procedures for conditional recipients once the investment project is considered to be operationally complete. The rule clarifies that the term operationally complete means that the project can be used for its intended purpose. As mentioned, it has been brought to our attention that both subsection 7B and subsection 11 of the draft rule omit reference to certain city processes found under RCW 82.59.070 and must be edited to conform to the statute. These changes are not interpretive and reiterate the requirements found under the statute. Considering this, we have included some proposed language on the next slide to clarify the process once the investment project is considered to be operationally complete. In relevant part, the prior version of this section omitted the preliminary statutory requirement that the conditional recipient must first provide documentation to the city, and the city must then determine that the project is consistent with the application and qualifies for tax deferral. After receiving the city's determination, the conditional recipient must then notify the department in writing that the investment project is operationally complete. The department will then finalize the amount eligible for tax deferral. As mentioned, this will include touring the investment property and auditing the conditional recipient's records. Please note that the city is not statutorily required to notify the department when a project is operationally complete. However, it would be very helpful and greatly appreciated if the city provides this information to the department. Next slide, please. Thank you. As mentioned, Please find the proposed updates the department intends to make in subsection 11 to better clarify city processes under RCW 82.59.070, as indicated on this slide. The updates on the slide are shown in the legislative redline style and read as such. What should a certificate holder do when its investment project is operationally complete? Within 30 days after the local jurisdiction issues the conditional recipient with a certificate of occupancy for the eligible investment project, the conditional recipient must file the documents as specified in RCW 82.59.070 sub 1 with the city. Within 30 days after receipt of such statements from the conditional recipient, the city must determine and notify the conditional recipient as to whether the work completed and the affordable housing to be offered are consistent with the application and the contract approved by the city, and the investment project continues to qualify for a tax deferral. Upon approval, the conditional recipient then has 30 days to notify the department in writing that the eligible investment project is operationally complete. And I will again stay here for a little bit to allow you to Okay, next slide, please. Subsection 12 of the rule provides that tax deferral recipients must begin filing an annual tax performance report with the department by May 31st, following the year in which the project is operationally complete. Tax deferral recipients must repeat this filing every year for 10 years. Subsection 13 of the draft rule provides that if a conditional recipient falls out of compliance with this statute after the issuance of a certificate of occupancy or opts to discontinue their compliance, then all of the deferred sales for use taxes are immediately due and payable, plus interest, which is calculated back to the date of the deferral. However, no penalty is imposed. If the conditional recipient voluntarily opts out of the deferral program, the conditional recipient must notify the city and the department within 60 days of the change of use or intended discontinuance. If the city finds that the project is no longer in compliance with statutory requirements, the city is required to notify the department of the noncompliance. Subsection 14 provides that if a conditional recipient maintains the property for qualifying purposes for at least 10 years, then the deferred sales and use taxes are not required to be repaid. Next slide, please. Subsection 15 provides that the deferred tax debt is not extinguished by insolvency, exchange, sale, or other disposition. Subsection 16 provides that an investment project can be sold and the tax debt may be transferred to the purchaser if the transferor promptly notifies the department and provides all requested information, and the transferee conforms with all requirements under Chapter 8259 RCW. If the investment project is sold and the transferor fails to notify the department, the deferred taxes are immediately due with interest calculated back to the date of deferral, but no penalty is imposed. A successor is liable for the full amount of deferred taxes under the same conditions as the original recipient. Lastly, please note that subsection 17 explains that an applicant may also apply for the multi-unit housing property tax exemption program under Chapter 8414 RCW. Recipients of the property tax exemption in Chapter 8414 RCW should be advised that the affordable housing requirements for this deferral are in addition to the requirements in Chapter 8414 RCW. Next slide, please. This concludes the highlights of the proposed rule draft. At this time, we will open the floor for any comments or feedback. Please remember to use the raise hand feature and please remain on mute until your name is called. Once we call your name, we ask that you please identify yourself for the record by providing your full name and the organization you are representing, if applicable. As mentioned, if you prefer to submit your comments in writing, we ask that you please send them to my colleague, Tim Danforth, at timd@dor.wa.gov by December 26, 2024. So, with that, do we have any comments or feedback? Raylan, I believe that your hand was raised.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, this is Raylan Barton. I am the Director of Policy and Membership for the Downtown Spokane Partnership. We would like to share our public comments to the proposed language for WAC 458-20305 that you just completed final rulemaking on. I see Amanda Beck will be speaking next, and we just would like to echo the City of Spokane's concerns and the implication and effects it'll have on developers for investing in our downtown area. Specifically, our developers have concern over the intent language as it is very subjective. Currently, proposed language changes that will hinder our redevelopment and expansion of affordable housing pertain to 458-20305M. And RCW 82590101013 regarding underutilized commercial property. Also, we are concerned with the language that calls out initiation of construction. It does not include soil testing, site clearing and grading, site preparation, or any other related activities that are initiated before the issuance of a building permit for the construction of foundation of the building. Also, we feel this reduces developer incentive to renovate and reimagining vacant buildings and would have an effect on four current buildings in our downtown core, specifically looking at section 3, lowercase a, underutilized commercial property, and what it is currently being used for versus intended to be used. This section appears to imply that a vacant building would not be eligible for the incentive. If that is the intent, the DSP does not support, as it would affect at least four buildings and would affect current projects in the downtown core. We would really like just to again clarify intent that is very subjective. And thank you for listening and your consideration as we move forward.
Thank you, Raylan. Thank you for your comments. And actually, if you would please consider submitting those in writing, we would very much appreciate it. Additionally, too, I think you had mentioned that this was the final rulemaking effort, which I do want to clarify that we are still within, the proposal stage. So any of your comments would be greatly appreciated at this point before we move to the finalization of the rule. So thank you again. Amanda, I see your hand is raised.
Thank you. Amanda Beck with the City of Spokane. Thanks for taking the time to outline the current changes. It wasn't clear that this wasn't the final rulemaking, so I do appreciate that clarification. We did submit comments to Tim Danford, but I did just want to highlight some that I still think are of concern and unaddressed, particularly the language about intended to be used. Because this incentive requires the property owner to be the applicant, that would leave developers in a position where they are intending to buy a building that presumably the market has shown is failing as commercial, and that they will continue to do commercial despite the potential for that use to fail. Because if they were to buy the building with the intent to apply for this incentive, it seems to leave it ineligible with the way that the WAC has been written. Obviously, that throws a lot of uncertainty into the development pipeline for property owners, developers looking at properties. So we would like some clarification around what that means exactly, particularly since this needs to be applied for before building permits. It's, seems as if we're contradicting ourselves a little bit. Another concern is the narrowing of commercial use. Retailing or office-related and administrative activities, while that does typically encompass what we think of as underutilized commercial, we think that there's a potential leaving of eligible buildings off the table because they're vacant or because their past historical use was perhaps light industrial or not a quote-unquote commercial as it is defined in the WACC use, but is otherwise either vacant or underutilized and would be prime for redevelopment into affordable housing. All of those comments are detailed in our letter that we sent to Tim Danford yesterday, but we just wanted to highlight that.
Perfect, and thank you so much, Amanda, for your comment. And we will look for your written comments as well. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I ask one thing? We've asked this a few times, and I definitely would like to hear from Department of Revenue clarification on this. We do appreciate that the WACC spells out that this incentive can be layered with the incentive from RCW 8292, or excuse me, 8414. But we're wondering if this can also be used on a site that can also qualify for the incentive that is in RCW 8292, which is the underutilized vacant land or parking to people.
Right. At least in terms of, providing you with an answer at this given moment, I would say that it depends on the facts and circumstances. I'm not really able to provide a definitive answer for that. And I'm not sure that we will provide that within the rule itself, as it seems a little bit outside the scope. Specifically, 8414 was clarified in statute, which is why we have this in the rule. We can, however, if you do submit that as a comment, we can certainly take a look at it and we can provide you with a more definitive answer at that time. Thank you. Any other comments or feedback? Unless Amanda, you had another comment. See, your hand is still raised. Terry, yeah.
Apologies, don't usually use Zoom, so it took me a while to figure out how to raise my hand.
No problem.
I wanted to add to Amanda's comments. We do have four projects that have already entered into this program, so we are gaining our recommendations are centered on what we're running into in trying to implement the incentive. It's so Amanda was very clear in what she put together in the letter to Mr. Danford. We fully support that. There are some things that we also feel need legislative changes. So we are looking at bringing forward some of those requests, but that's separate. That's a legislative ask. One thing that you said today that I kind of went, okay, maybe this is how we could address skywalks. You mentioned that other entrances into the property. What would you mean by that? Because would it be possible that our second floor entrances into the building via skywalk don't, I don't know how to say this. Some of those are commercial uses and they retain public access. they aren't going to be strictly housing. So, how are you intending that additional entrances?
Right. And so I think the section that you are referring to was when I was talking about the mixed use properties, and how some of the access points for those properties could be considered to be related facilities. And so for that, we had requested that folks please submit a letter ruling to the department to have us, to provide additional facts and documentation on those specific facts and circumstances to allow us to determine whether or not those other access points could be considered related facilities and therefore potentially eligible for the deferral. However, if you could also please submit that comment specifically in writing so that then we could kind of think about it and discuss it further, that would be very much appreciated.
Thank you. I'll ask Amanda to add it to the city's comments.
Great, thank you so much. Any other comments or feedback on the rule draft? Jerry.
Sorry. I'd like to know if there are any other jurisdictions on the call that are considering implementing this or are trying to.
I'm sorry, Terry. I didn't. I guess I should clarify if that question was directed to me or if that was directed to the call
You're out of here,
generally.
man. Anybody.
Okay.
Doesn't look like anybody else is contemplating it.
Well, any additional comments or feedback on the proposed rule draft? Okay, with that, it sounds like we have all of our comments and feedback. It seems like that portion is completed. Next slide, please. Great. So now before closing this public hearing, I will recap the rulemaking process. This has been the public hearing for the proposed new rule 305, titled Sales and Use Tax Deferral, Conversion of Underutilized Commercial Property into Affordable Housing. Based on comments made today or received in writing, additional changes may be made before the final revised rule is filed for adoption with the code reviser. If the department determines that substantive changes to the proposed rule are necessary based on the comments received, the department will announce and hold an additional public hearing for this draft rule. If the department determines that substantive changes to the proposed rule are not necessary, the department will file the final filing for this rule. Unlike today's public hearing, the final filing of a rule is not a public process. The final filing is simply a filing of the notice of adoption. Absent an emergency adoption, or unless otherwise stated, a rule becomes effective 31 days after filing for adoption. To the extent that rule changes are the result of specific statutory changes, such changes are effective on the effective date of the law change, regardless of when the rule is adopted. Next slide, please. Thank you for participating in this public hearing. If you are not on the department's rule notification list and/or you did not receive a notice of today's hearing directly from the department and you would like to keep informed of future rulemaking activities related to this rule, please provide Kathy Holder with your name, mailing address, and email address at kathyh@dor.wa.gov. That is also in the chat. This public hearing is now adjourned. For the record, the time is now 11:48 a.m. Thank you so much.